I talk to you and find some of that stuff?
Unfortunately, we have not. That is still on my to-do list. We just, you know, how life happens sometimes. It seems like every time I turn around, there's something else that has to be done. So, but it's still on my list. We're gonna get it worked out because I want to be able to check out some more stars and see some of the ones that you can't see with the naked eye. That's for sure. So we just gotta take the time to go to, you know, out on the road or wherever we have a long space where we can spot it and get everything lined up. So if we still can't do it, though, I'm going to tell Chad to pack it up and bring it up your way and see if you can't help us.
This is KN4RJN. Well, the beer's in the fridge, and I'll have the coffee on and whatever else we need, and there's plenty of wine in the cupboard. So, yeah, pack it up and come on up here. But I know Chad's a hunter, so he surely has a decent set of binoculars, and there's a whole lot you can see with just binoculars, too. So, if you haven't got time, get the scope out. At least go out on the back porch or whatever with a good pair of binoculars and scan the skies. You can see quite a bit.
This is KO4RYP. I told him that the other day. I said, surely you've got, you know, a scope on one of your hunting rifles even that you could take off and let me borrow. And he looked at me like I just asked him to, I don't know, give up his right arm if to have to take a scope off of a hunting rifle. So, but we've got to have some binoculars around here. It's just a matter of my finding them. And so I will do that. Now, if I want to see the meteor shower, am I going to need some binoculars to do that?
This is KN4RJN. No, that's strictly just your eyeballs. Just go out there and in a comfortable lawn chair, chaise lounge, something that'll recline so you don't strain your neck looking up. Lay back. If it's cold, put a blanket on and grab some hot chocolate. If it's warm, then you don't have to mess with that, but just lay back and lay out there for a while. Let your eyes adjust. Turn out all the lights in the house and off the porch and as many as you can. And just lay out there for a little while. The rate on this one is roughly about 18 per hour, which is not a whole lot, but it's enough. And you should be able to, if you lay out there for an hour or so, you should be able to see, you know, a few. Every once in a while they get a, what you call a fireball. One of them will really just brighten up. But they're coming in at, the average speed of these, as they come in from our perspective, is about, let's see, what was it? I've got it in here somewhere. About 49 meters per second, 49, 48, something like that. Or kilometers per second, excuse me, which is running in the vicinity of 110,000 miles per hour. So these things are screaming. They're moving pretty fast. And every once in a while, one of them will light up big time and you have what they call a fireball. And those are kind of cool to watch, but it takes patience, and you just kind of, you know, just look in that general vicinity. They appear to radiate out of the constellation Lyra, but that doesn't mean you won't see one somewhere else as well. So you can see them just about anywhere, but if you look to the northeast and find Vega and just look in that general vicinity and don't, you know, fixate on Vega, but, you know, just kind of scan the sky and you're bound to catch, you know, a few. And it's if you got nothing else to do that evening, you can sit out there and, you know, with your hot chocolate or your hot toddy or whatever it is you want, and sit out there and look up at the sky and watch for a while.
For RYP, I'm definitely going to do that, Mr. John, for sure. I will make sure, see if I can convince Chad to traipse out there with me, and we'll get the beach chairs and lean them all the way back so we can see what we can see. Hot toddy in hand. That sounds like a good plan.
This is KN4RJN. Yeah, there. I can think of worse ways to spend an evening. So, yeah. Yeah, drag him out there with you. Make him, you know, lay down and just relax for a while and just stare up at the sky. And it ought to be interesting.
I'll make sure to have a report for you next time I call the net, so make sure you check in next Monday night with me, and we'll chat about what we've seen. Are you going to try to go out tonight and watch, or are you going to wait a little bit closer to the 21st or the 22nd?
Just KN4RJN. Well, you know, it's been cloudy here all day, but I just took the dog out and happened to look up and I said, oh, wow, it's cleared up. There's stars up there. So I may go out and look for a little while. But it's cold out there right now. It's supposed to warm up later on in the week, so I might wait till it gets a little warmer.
Maybe you'll, Matt. I think it'll be a much more enjoyable evening when it is a little bit warmer out there. There's nothing like a warm spring evening, and that's always a fun time, I think, to be outside and where it's not blazing hot but warm enough that it's comfortable. Although I really don't mind cool and chilly. Bitter cold, not so much, but I enjoy bundling up in a blanket, so I still may venture out tonight. I'll check it out and see if it's cloudy or if it's cleared up here, too.
This is KM4RJ, and yeah, well, 40 degrees is bitter cold for me. my blood's been zoomed out a little bit too much, but yeah, give it a shot and let me know what you see. In any event, this is KN4RJ, and I'm going to back on out of here and say 73s to everybody. This is KN4RJ, and I am clear.
This is KO4RYP. Thank you so much, Mr. John, for taking a few minutes to chat with me tonight, and I always enjoy it. Hope you guys have a great evening. So 73s to you. All right. At this time, I'm going to make another call for check-ins or comments. Any station wishing to check in Alpha through Zulu, please call KO4RYP.
RYP. 8RON, Whiskey Delta 8, Romeo Oscar November, and Brevard. The name is Ed. And I'm wondering if Chad had heard from Chandler today about Chandler's experience with electricity.
KO4RYP, Net Control for the Blue Ridge 2-meter net. I'd like to welcome Mr. Ed and Brevard, WD8RON. Mr. Ed, thank you for checking in with me. And yes, we did hear from Chandler today about his run-in with some lightning and between his lightning and his antenna. So I think that I didn't hear the extent of all of that, but I did know that Chandler was out on his mobile chatting with us or with Chad earlier today, and they had some conversations about the station and what needed to happen next. So I do hate it for Mr. Chandler, but it is also a thing that happens to every ham. It has to happen to every ham every now and again. So I do hope that he gets everything squared away. But I know Chad talked with him for a while today.
This morning, I'm not sure if it was on this repeater or another one, but he was really excited and very upset. He can also tell Chad that I have my Yagi about 10 feet above the deck.
That's great, Mr. Ed. I definitely will make sure he knows. Are you talking with the Yagi tonight?
I'm still on the J-pole. I tried the Yagi. I have it. I'm playing with the orientation. And right now I have it pointed at about 30 degrees. And you are about 180 degrees, I think. So I was able to hear people with a lot of noise off the rear of the Yagi, but unable to hit the repeater.
Well, I'm glad that you've got it in position and you're experimenting with it. I know Chad's been doing a lot with ours and just running the direction on it, trying to get it in the best place to talk to certain people. So it's been very, I've learned a lot here lately about antennas and direction and how all this works, way more than I learned studying for my exam to get my license, that's for sure.
A couple of pictures via phone that he might be interested in. I had to do a little bit of re-engineering from my original idea.
He'd love to see those, so please do send them his way for sure. And I think that's what makes it meaningful when you have to rethink and you run into an issue and so you have to re-engineer it to work a different way. So I know it's always a work in progress, and something tells me, I've kind of gathered from talking with or listening to Chad talk with other hams, that in this hobby, it's never perfect. There's always room for more or different or higher or stronger. So I'm kind of getting the idea that everybody is constantly re-engineering their whole station to be able to do more and reach more.
Far off with it going north, I've used Google Earth to plot most of the repeaters that I normally use, and a whole bunch of them are up north of here, or northeast, so I've got it pointed at about 30 degrees now, and playing with it, and I just did that this afternoon, so I haven't really had a chance to play with it.
Start to send some pictures to Chad. I know he's anxious to see what you settle on and how it's working. So I'm super glad that you're working with it and getting it to where you can use it like it's supposed to be used.
It's been an interesting experience building it. Seems to be working all right. If it's just a matter of getting it pointed in the right direction.
That is always the rub, isn't it? Making sure it's pointed in the right direction and taking elevation into account, too, and figuring out the best way. I know that Chad talks a lot about even being able to turn it in a different direction, but to bounce off another object or a mountain or whatever, to be able to get a good signal. So it's definitely always growing and evolving, that's for sure.
Before, where you go around a mountain by bouncing it off something else, and that gets to be real interesting. Sometimes a few degrees can make a big difference.
That's the truth. And that's what amazes me, that, you know, just turning it just a little bit more will make the signal so much clearer, or you'll be able to reach something that you haven't been able to reach before.
We had a microwave shot, and we couldn't figure out what was happening because the signal would go up and down during the day. It would be strong and then get weaker and weaker and then go back up and up. It turns out we were shooting across a bay, and the tides were affecting it.
Interesting. I never would have thought about that, but it makes sense.
The shot, some people were building and a couple more stories to a building, and same thing with the signal. It started going out because they were building a couple more stories right in the path of the signal.
So your best laid plans or your best laid antenna shots got impeded by a couple of extra stories of somebody else's building project. Goodness.
A treaty or a contract, so the people who built the building had to put a repeater in their building.
That is very interesting. That is very, very interesting. So that was like, and part of the contract that they, for them to get the building project, was they had to put a repeater there?
Details on that is just that they could not interfere with the signal. So once they had figured out that's what was interfering, they had to correct it.
Very interesting. I bet the next time that contractor put a bid in for a job, he researched the area a little bit before he did, just in case, just to see if there was some kind of radio signal that he would be interfering with.
Oh, so I think they figured they would just ignore it and see what happened.
Very well did it.
We ended up with another repeater in the middle.
Interesting. Very, very interesting. Well, Mr. Ed, please send those pictures to Chad. I know he's anxious to see your setup and how things are going for you up there. And it's definitely been good to talk with you. I hope you have a great evening.
Well, those lines, for anybody else listening, have some friends who were buying a house trailer, is what I'll call it, whatever they call it now, mobile home or something like that. But before they actually purchased it, they had the seller come out and look at their lot, which is, of course, up on the mountain. And he could not get the trailer up the driveway to the site they wanted to put it at. Fortunately, they had not purchased it. Otherwise, they would have had a trailer with no place to put it. So try to look at things like that that you never think of, but try to anticipate what might happen. Well, I enjoyed talking to you, but I'll let you get back to the net.
Thank you very much, Ed. I appreciate it. Thanks for chatting with me for a few minutes. This is KO4RYP, net control for the Blue Ridge 2-meter net. Are there any additional stations wishing to check in all the way through the alphabet? Please call KO4RYP.
4RYP.
4RYP, go ahead.
This is Kilo 4, Alpha Alpha Echo in Asheville. Over.
This is KO4RYP, net control for Blue Ridge 2-meter net. I'd like to... Is that you, Mr. Richard? Is that your name? I'm sorry, I didn't have you on my log from earlier.
Yes, it is. I just turned on the radio and heard your call for check-in. Over.
Sure would like to welcome you, K4AAE, Mr. Richard in Asheville. Thank you so much for checking in tonight. You made number 6. That's always my goal when I call the net, to get to at least 60 check-ins. So I'm super glad you stopped by and heard my call and answered back. We call this net every night at 9 p.m. and show a different net controller every night. So we would love for you to check in with us again. Thank you for stopping by. Any stations all the way through the alphabet wishing to check in, please call KO4RYP.
KO4RYP. P4 Charlie Tango Whiskey, W4 CTW. This is Tyler and Taylor's, and I'll be negative and negative.
Check in, Joe. That is Kilo Kilo 4, Juliet Delta in Greer. Negative and negative this evening. Over.
4RYP, net control for the Blue Ridge 2-meter net. I'd like to welcome W4CTW, Mr. Tyler in Taylor's. Thank you for stopping by, Mr. Tyler. I appreciate it. And Mr. Joe in Greer, KK4JD. Thank you for stopping by tonight, too. I appreciate it. Any other stations wishing to check in, please call KO4RYP. 4RYP, net control for the Blue Ridge 2-meter net. Have I missed any stations for comments? Please call KO4RYP.
Ms. Anna, this is KN4HTP.
HTP, this is KO4RYP. Go ahead, Ms. Wendy.
I've been listening in and thoroughly enjoying it. And I, Mark and I, well, I want us to get together, the four of us. Chad and you and me and Mark, we should pick some place halfway between our location and get together for a dinner and a nice long chat. So just wanted to put that out there for you guys to talk about, and we can pick a spot and pick a time.
I would love that. We would enjoy that very much. So I will definitely see if I can get that in the works. I'll probably get Chad to give Mark my cell phone number to give to you, and then maybe we can work out the details. Somehow when I leave the chat, it does never get done. So let's you and I connect, and we'll get something on the books. We'd enjoy that. And Ms. Wendy, I have a funny story I have to tell you really quick. So I had to go to Myrtle Beach a couple of weeks ago for some testing for some students, and Chad went with me, and I'm super glad he did, because the day that we drove down, it was crazy bad storms the entire way. It was just terrible weather. So we got off on these back roads once we got off the interstate heading to Merle's Inlet, and it had been pouring rain, just pouring rain, and all of a sudden Chad, you know, he's driving, he said, "My gosh, did you see the size of that bullfrog on the side of the road?" And I instantly said, "Well, it is, has been a frog strangler."
100% true. The poor frog is trying not to drown.
Just laughed and laughed, but that is the first thing I thought of. Well, it was the frog strangler, so I said, I've got to tell Miss Wendy next time. And when you come popped back in, it reminded me, so I'm super glad you did.
Well, I love the frog strangler fun that's going around. I love it.
Started something, that's for sure.
You guys have a good evening. This is KN4HTP. I'll be clear.
OIP. Thanks, Wendy. I enjoyed it, and I look forward to chatting with you soon and getting together. This is KO4RYP, net control for the Blue Ridge 2-meter net. Any stations, have I missed any stations for comments or check-in? Please call KO4RYP. 4RYP, net control for the Blue Ridge 2-meter net. Just a reminder, we run this net every night at 9 p.m., and we sure would appreciate your patronage tomorrow night and every night thereafter. And tomorrow night, my husband, Chad, KO4NUE, will be calling the net and hosting a roundtable discussion afterwards for any and all things ham-related. So please be sure to check in with him. And just so you know, we have a friendly little competition going on in our home as to who gets the most check-ins. So we will, we're always anxious. If you want him to win this week, then check in with him tomorrow night. If not, if you want me to win this week, that is fine, too. You don't have to check in with him. A little bit of trouble. All right. At this time, I will pause and submit my net report electronically. 4RYP now securing the Blue Ridge 2-meter net with our thanks for checking in. We will now return the repeater back to normal amateur use. 7-3s and good night.
K4JBQ, KO4NUE.
4NUE, KK4JBQ here.
Larry, how are you tonight?
I finally caught up with myself. We did some spring cleaning today. I mentioned that as I spoke with Anna earlier, and oh my goodness, we have what is properly called an etagere. It's a cabinet that was initially made originally for, you know, to be an entertainment center. So it has this pull-out thing that swivels from left to right to set your TV on that. That's back during the days of CTRs. Okay. And it had one shelf beneath it. Well, there's a drawer, and then there's a smaller drawer on the right. But it had some shelving on it. One of the shelves had a platform that pulled out on a slide. And that was for your turntable, Chad. So that's how old this thing is. Well, I took all the doors off. And these were, you know, it would close up and everything would push back in the cabinet and close it up with a nice looking doors, actually. Things made of cherry. But I took all the doors off and hung a big flat screen on front of it. And the bottom doors, I put all of the, you know, the DVD player and the VCR and all that stuff. Well, okay. So you kind of got a picture of it anyway. And we keep it in the same room with the litter box. Now, if you have a cat, you know that litter sometimes has a desiccant in it. But also, you can sprinkle scented baking soda. You know, Arm & Hammer sells it, and that makes it smell nice. So, you know, we're in this room a lot, and so it gets in the air. You know, she gets in there and fluffs it up again, and it gets in the air. So it's been like a lot of years since we took everything out of that cabinet and cleaned it. So there was this really fine powder. It was that cat box deodorizer is what was in there, and it was everything. So it wasn't just cleaning the floors and washing the windows and, you know, rearranging the furniture a little bit. It was all of that. KK4JPQ.
Got you busy. That's good, though. That's good. Get out and, you know, get your blood pumping a little bit. I got a couple things I want to talk to you about tonight. One is, so evidently there's been some new rules been to Ham Shack. I'd like to save what I thought was my Ham Shack. There have been some new rules added. And not exactly sure how that has happened. But there's a running tally on the wall here, a piece of paper with some new rules. I'm going to have to figure out exactly what's happened with that. But second thing I want to talk to you about is front-to-back ratio. Can you give me some pointers there?
Second thing first, I'll know a little more about that than what rules have changed in your shack. Front-to-back ratio. Well, you know, either a Yagi or a log periodic are directional antennas, and inasmuch as you're using them for that particular advantage, you have a driven element, and behind that you have a reflector, and in front of that you have various numbers of directors, which do sort of a focusing, like a telescope or binoculars would focus. The directors focus a beam, and so that's why we use that word to describe all of these various types of directional antennas. We call them beams. Now, the ratio of how much is going straight out and focused and how much is actually getting, it's going backward. You know, otherwise the thing would be omnidirectional, right? If it were vertical, just vertical, it would be equally strong in all directions. But a directional antenna will fire it forward, and a little bit leaks on the backside. So you'll have, let me tell you, the first QSO I ever had on HF was a station in New Hampshire who caught me on the backside of his beam. That's the way he put it. Now, this was a step IR, a beautiful, I don't know how high it was, maybe 60 feet. This guy put $4,000 or $5,000 worth into that, just that one antenna. And it's beautiful. And his shack was beautiful. He and his wife were both hams, and they put all of their, that's what they wanted to do in their retirement, just become the best hams they could ever be. So he caught me on the backside of his beam. When he turned around, I had to reach over quick and turn the volume down, you know, because he was coming right down my throat. Is that enough? KK4JBQ.
Cool. Building Yagi in the shop today, and learned a lot. I mean a lot. I remember studying about front-to-back ratio for the exam. Absolutely no clue what it was, but now I'm seeing the advantage to that, or disadvantage, depending on how you wanna word it. But here are my observations as of today, with what I've learned so far with building your own Yagi. Observation number one: having three or four books to consult with one design is not a good idea. Not at all. Second thing that I learned was that once I got everything, once we got everything assembled, I could not get the SWR anywhere within reason. I mean, it was just, you know, it was horrible. And I monkeyed with it and monkeyed with it, and then we monkeyed with it and couldn't get it right. And then finally, we just decided we'd take a break. Let me let my radio drop. I messed with it by myself for a little bit, and I thought, well, you know, SWR was up around 6, I think. And I thought, well, let me just pull the reflector out and pull the director out and just leave the driven element and let me see just, you know, what I got then. And oh my word, when you pull the reflector and the director out, the SWR fell. I mean, it was, according to my meter, 1.1 to 1.2, just right off the bat. I went back and looked at the book that I had, got the plans out of an ARRL book. You know, cut them specifically the way the book said to. But the book that Andy gave me not too awful long ago, that is very well written, it made mention, just a little tip down at the bottom, a little note, to make the directors, each director needs to be 5% shorter than the one behind it. So I had a super short director, so I just took the long one out and put the short one in. And SWR stayed, you know, really low. So I just said, okay, well, let me try that. So I measured it out and, you know, cut 5% off of the front director. And bam, I mean, it fell right in place. Boom, just like that. And I just thought, oh, my word, cannot believe something 12 3/4 inches away is affecting SWR that bad. Let me make sure I got it.
Experimentation and the use of several books has taught you a great deal just in that one construction. Antennas, I don't know. It's one of the things I have done in my past is I repaired cameras. And for that, I studied at National Camera Repair School in Inglewood, Colorado. And the hardest study was lenses, especially compound lenses, and what glass will do. Now, we're focusing light waves, and it's very similar. Light waves are very similar to radio waves in the way they act. So a compound lens is one that has a lens that's ground on one surface to accept another lens that's actually, their great advantage is to gluing those things together. They mate together. They glue it with a type of rosin that you get from a certain balsam tree, you know, kind of a pine tree. A Canadian balsam is what was used at that time to cement those lens elements together. So as light passed through one lens, it made a change. And then as it struck that surface of the next lens, it made another change. That's exactly what it does on a Yagi. It just focuses tighter and tighter and tighter as it gets toward the front. Now, any of that focusing is controlled specifically by the distance between your directors. The distance of your radiating element from the first director. And then, of course, the reflector is pushing all of it back toward the front. It reflects anything it sees, most of what it sees. But that's what you learn, that the that everybody has a different formula for distancing and whatnot. Some people take a gamma match and put it in line with your feed line at right at the point where the antenna is fed on the radiating element. They'll put a gamma match in there to do some tweaking, you might say. They are fascinating. But even more so is a log periodic, and that's all I'll say about that. It does get into the math. A log periodic does. Antennas are the most fascinating part. Since I'm never going to be taking radios apart and fixing them, this is the thing in the real world that makes a lot of sense to me, and it is what a lot of amateurs overlook, just how important your antenna is. You know, you can put $10,000 in the shack, but if you use a $50 antenna, well, think about that. KK4JBQ.
The other thing is, so the driven element, the way it's set up is, it's on a piece of Delrin to keep it separate from the boom, so that each sides of the driven element don't come in contact with one another. And it's able to slide. I can move it up and down the boom. So I can move it closer to the director, or I can move it closer to the reflector. So just by watching what was happening with my meter today, I was able to deduce that if you pretend that the driven element is a light bulb, then that means the reflector would be a mirror and the director would be a lens, which begs the question. That's when it clicked with me. Okay, front to back ratio. So I went and looked in my book, tried to find some things about front to back ratio, and lo and behold, there are some advantages to having different front-to-back ratios. So, that begs the question, is what are some of those advantages or disadvantages? I'm assuming that may change on the front end. That may change the shape of my lobe. Which I can definitely see an advantage to that. But what you pay for on the front, you lose on the back. And I'm not quite sure I'm understanding what could happen when that driven element is changed. It's got to be some advantages and disadvantages to both, but what do you know about that?
Very good real world comparison with lights and mirrors for the reflector, of course. But the directors act differently. More like lensing, a lensing effect, a focusing effect. I did have to study telescopic lenses, much like the lenses that are built into a scope on your rifle. They're compound lenses in there, but they move, and sometimes they'll move closer together. You continue to focus, and they'll begin to move apart again. The lenses are designed in groups, so you'll have a group of three sort of midway and in the barrel of the scope, and you'll have a group of two that do the final focusing at the far end. It is very mathematical. It is very, it's not theoretical so much. Although when you're working with numbers, it's different than working with materials. As you quickly learn, if you make, say, your antenna from aluminum, or you make one element, let's say the driven element, from copper, you can do that. You can make one element from copper and one from aluminum. It's kind of experimentation that people do. But it's something to keep in mind, at least, that light, as it projects, as it leaves the source, will become dimmer as it moves over distance. And I learned something I'll never forget, and it served me in so many ways, because this particular theorem is expressed mathematically, but it works in so many things, because light is so much like any energy that radiates. Light falls off or gets dimmer at the inverse square of the distance. That's the mathematical formula. Falling off at the inverse square of the distance. So something that's four times further away is 4 squared more dim. It falls off at a greater than you thought it might. So that's why having more directors out front, more directors focus the beam more narrowly. And so you have a beam that might have a 3-degree, and that's another specific about every antenna. How tight the beam is will have advantage or maybe be a disadvantage, because you've got maybe 3 degrees of azimuth either way, and you're completely off target. Your target might be further away, and so harder to reach, harder to focus on. So maybe you have a nine element director, and could well do with a director that's 4, you know, because you're focusing that beam tighter. Antennas are fascinating, and you just dipped your toe in the pool of Yagi's. They are fascinating. And you'll get a different outcome the next time you make one, because you will refine what you've learned with this one. And it's nice that you have a machine shop there. You could make just about anything you want to.
I hope we probably have it finished up tomorrow, I guess. But after I got so when I'm down in the shop, I have tried to carry my handy down there before, and it just doesn't work inside the building. I can't really. I hear the repeater every now and then. And if I set it near a window, I can, you know, it's just, can't talk on it. It's just scratchy. And so I just, you know, kind of given up on having a handy in the shop. But I had that thing in the vise and had it, you know, clamped down, and was, got my SWR right. Got all of the directors and reflectors where they were supposed to go. And, I said, well, let me just hook this handy to it real quick and just see if I can even hear anything. and I didn't even get the connector plugged into the thing quick enough, and bam, there was Tom just a-talking. And I thought, man, this thing is something else. You know, it just came to life right there on the workbench. I mean, it became he was like a living animal just as soon as I swear I didn't even touch the contactors on the connector on the radio. And I thought, oh, man, this is something else. I just lit up like a Christmas tree.
Yeah. Of course you did. And I'm happy for you. That's very satisfying when something like that happens. You could, of course, depending on, you know, where you go with this in the future, you could put an antenna outside the building that the shop is in. So, you know, and that could be omnidirectional and whatever, but you'll have some height, and this is a building you don't have to worry about somebody saying anything to you about it. You put whatever you want to on it. And that gets it outside of the Faraday cage that the roof might be, you know. I don't know, do you have a metal roof there or metal siding on the building? Everything is changing. Everything is different depending on the environment that the antenna is in. It's a little surprising that you're indoors and got that kind of result. So did you kind of steer the antenna around and see if you were aiming at the sweet spot to receive?
So after, you know, I got everything kind of clamped down, we did take it outside, and there's, you know, some definite, there's some definite lobes to it, pretty obvious, but I mean, it does work. It does work really well. But this has opened up a whole new bunch of questions, and I'll probably leave those for maybe tomorrow night. But I'm seeing, I don't know for sure, but I'm saying that there probably is a benefit to being able to move your front-to-back ratio. There's got to be some advantages and disadvantages to that. Also, you know, next question would be, you know, how do you measure that? And one other obvious point that obviously is not that obvious because I forgot and just lost my train of thought, but it'll come back to me here in a minute, I guess. But sorry, Larry, I just totally lost it. I'm showing my tired, so let's do that. So I'll have some questions for you tomorrow night. And I just get it. We'll get it finished up tomorrow, and then we'll see. We'll go from there. But I'm gonna cut it short tonight and get a little bit of rest. So I'll say 73. So I'll be clear on your final, Larry.
I know you've had a big day. Bless your heart. KK4JBQ, if anybody cares. One advantage, just to kind of fill that in just a little bit. One advantage of having a different front-to-back ratio than purely everything blasting through the front and nothing on the back, I suppose you could manage that. But what if you didn't want a totally directional antenna? You wanted a focused antenna, a directional antenna, but you didn't want to ignore, just like that Step IR up there in New Hampshire, he did not ignore the fact that I made a call. He heard a weak signal. He turned his beam around to point right at me when I told him where I was. And he was shooting his beam right down my throat. So it's sort of like having a spotter scope, in a way, the reflector. If it doesn't reflect everything back toward the front, you get the advantage of spotting someone that's behind you or behind the antenna. And then you can turn it, of course. And then how do you measure that? Well, you measure it with a field strength meter. And there's two points of measurement. That is where you place the meter in order to run the test. One is in the near field, and one is in the far field. And the far field is very far, you know, like a couple of miles away. And the near field can be, you know, 100 feet away from the antenna. And there's different reasons for using both of those positions for your field strength meter, which just has a small, inefficient antenna because it's getting the full blast of the antenna, but has a small antenna on it and a meter, and you use the same instrument and you compare the results from that same instrument as you step away from the antenna and getting your field strength. Anyway, hope you have a good night. I know it's been a big day for you. It's been a big day here, and tomorrow will be another one. We're not finished with this one room. Just one room. And anyway, thank you for coming. Come at me tonight. It's been a pleasure to talk with you, Chad. Hope you get some really good rest. This is KK4JBQ, and I am clear.
JBQ, this is WD8RON. Over.
WD8RON. KK4JBQ. And how's your day today?
I was listening to your conversation about the Yagis. I've been working on one. Chad was helping me with it. I had to do some re-engineering for the mass support because I was using PVC initially, 3/4 inch with about a 6 inch rod to mount it on the deck. But that wasn't high enough, so I had to go to an inch and a half, about 10 feet high. However, I mounted the 3/4 on top of that, and the 3/4 would not support it, so I ended up with an antenna pointing toward the moon.
Have you ever considered using metal for your mast?
Today I redid it. I cut off the 3/4, so it's about 1.5 feet long, mounted that to the other, so it seems to be fairly substantial now. I wanted to get it above the metal roof that it was right next to. But I have a question on tuning. I got this out of a magazine and combined a couple, and so far it seems to be working pretty good. When Chad checked it, the SWR was really good. But one of the plans had the director about 1/4 inch, the two parts, about 1/4 inch apart. A heat shrink tubing keeping it together. Well, when I drilled a hole in the PVC, in order to get it through that, I had to make too large a hole, so there was no real support for the two elements. On another set of plans, it used a different approach. It had the two parts of the driver, but coming in from opposite sides, about an 1/8 to 1/4 inch apart. Description makes any sense?
It does make sense. I can picture it. You do have the director on a Yagi is necessarily a little like a miniature dipole, okay? And you know that both elements of a dipole have to be separated in the middle. That's where your feed line comes to both the left side and the right side. However you wire it up, there's a left side and a right side. And you have to maintain that separation in order for the flow of voltage and current. These are the two things that are operating in a dipole. And they're 90 degrees out of phase. So with a dipole, ordinarily your current will be highest at the far end. And your voltage will be highest. I think that's correct. And your voltage will be highest in the center. and it can be just, you know, just opposite, depending on the length of each element. So the length is critical, as we know. Getting a half wavelength on the full thing is necessary. So each of the legs are quarter wavelength. And so there you have a full wave, or a rise from zero to maximum and back down to zero, of both your voltage and your current, but they're 90 degrees out of phase. This is what makes it work. This is what provides the push. And it's a little hard to explain that in, you know, without a lot of math. But you can picture it, and you can see these if you look it up, you know, the phase angles and that sort of thing on dipoles. And if you understand that, get to know that, it'll help you, well, for one thing, be aware of where the voltage is the highest and where the current is the highest. That current being high on the ends of the dipole, on the two ends, there's an arc between the two. So that current being high is what pushes, because current is push. It pushes your RF out. It launches it. And the angle at which it is launched depends greatly on the height of the antenna. So the height of your antenna, and, you know, whatever signal you're trying to toss out the end of it, you know, the height of your antenna is very critical. It's some people refer to it as the launch angle, you know. And ideal for DX is 5 degrees off the horizon. But not so important if you are trying to talk closer in, you know. It could be a quarter of a wavelength high, which, for, you know, many high frequencies is not very high. You could be 6 foot off the ground and be just fine with a VHF. Anyway, I've talked too long. KK4JPQ.